Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I really appreciate it, and we have a fantastic show for you today that I think you're going to really, really dig. So let's get into it. Today's guest left Australia 25 years ago to become a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University. Today, he lives in Canada and is the founder and senior partner at Box of Crayons, a company that helps organizations do less good work and more great work. What started 15 years ago as a one-person business has grown into a thriving team of 20-plus people seeing exponential growth. He's also the author of several books, including The Wall Street Journal bestseller, The Coaching Habit. Now, let's hack Michael Bungay Stanier. Do you know what drives the value of your business? Is it customers? Is it contracts? Is it culture? To really understand this, we need insights into our customers, clients, and markets. And to do this simply and beautifully, we need Typeform. Or more simply, you and your business needs Typeform. Typeform is versatile, and you can use it at every stage of your funnel, from research to lead generation to just simply selling stuff with the Stripe integration. You can have tutorials, quizzes, even FAQs if you're short on support staff. The results don't lie. Typeform has a 57% completion rate on surveys. That goes against the industry average of about 20%, according to Survey Gizmo. That's more data for you to play with and more data to understand what drives the value of your business. Typeform also integrates with your favorite tools, including Google Sheets, MailChimp, Airtable, and hundreds more. And you can also collect data through Facebook Messenger with their Typeform chat feature. Remember, what you ask matters. How you ask is everything. Join former President Barack Obama and myself in making data collection a little more human. Sign up for free today. Plus, there's a special offer for you as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You can upgrade to their pro plan and you'll get 30% off for 6 months. Go to typeform.com/hack. They have absolutely excellent support staff and help center to get you going fast. Remember, when collecting data, remember one rule. Put people first, data second. And, I mean, ironically enough, you'll get all the data you could possibly need. Once again, to get that special offer, go to typeform.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Michael, welcome to the show.
Look, I'm super happy to be here. You know, it was about a few months ago, you and I had coffee together in Toronto, and we're like, we should get on the show, and I'm glad we've made it.
And here we are.
Exactly. Great plans.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun, I think. So should we jump into it?
You lead, and I will follow as best I can.
Let's do it. Michael, I'm going to say you're a man that wears many hats. Today, we're talking to Michael the Entrepreneur.
Yes.
And as an entrepreneur, Michael, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So the biggest thing that, that's such a tricky question because, you know, there's so many things that if they weren't there, the thing could fall apart. But I would say that the moment that I count my entrepreneurial stirrings turning into something that was useful and practical was when I saw Dan Sullivan, the guy behind Strategic Coach, talk about the three phases of business growth. And he said, look, you start off and you identify with your task. I am a coach. I am a dentist. You then realize that actually this is the second phase, and not everybody gets there, but everybody who's listening here gets it, which is I am an entrepreneur who coaches, or I am an entrepreneur who does dentistry. And it's an immediate shift. And you've had 8 billion episodes talking about this, about what it means from just being a technical person to being an entrepreneur who delivers that. Because now you care about sales and marketing and building an organization. And then the third phase is to say, I create intellectual property around coaching or dentistry or whatever it might be. Because the IP moment is when you discover what you can scale beyond yourself. And when I first moved to Toronto 16 years ago and really had kind of been pushed into starting Box of Crayons, and because I got fired from my previous job, and I finally went, okay, if I believed in the secret, this would be the universe telling me, Michael, do something. That planted that very early seed, which is around how do I codify what I do that allows me to scale. And everything I've done has been great, but it's the codification of content that has actually allowed the growth. Without that, nothing would happen.
Interesting. So Dan Sullivan, also a local here.
Yes.
So from this identifying or being the coach or consultant, whatever you happen to be, to an entrepreneur who to IP, 15 years ago, starting Box of Crayons, how long did it take you, would you say, to get from like step one to step two, or phase one, phase two to phase three?
Well, I did a classic, you know, when I started, which was my business plan at the start was I'll do anything. I'll work with anybody with a wallet and a pulse. Because, you know, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, using that Jim Collins metaphor, I'm in the process of firing bullets to figure out what it's all about. But even in that very first year, I created my first piece of intellectual property. It was called The 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun. I was giving a talk and went, okay, this is my chance to see if I can even do this. And so I came up with the title, The 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun. I was like, that's a cool title. I wonder what they are. And I was like, okay. So, and this is the way my brain works, is I work best when I see a structure, I see something with pattern and a rhythm to it. And then I go, okay, so what fills in that to make it actually work? And so I created the 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun. It was literally a single sheet of paper that I designed, and that went down really well. So that got turned into a little animated movie. And actually that really took off. That got seen by millions of people. So I managed to build a list for a while based on that. And so now I started getting the bug, but I didn't do a whole lot more around that until in 2008, or 5 or 6 years later, I wrote my first book. And that's kind of another big step towards that, creating your own content. So pretty early on, I started developing IP. But really the scalability of that IP, in other words, using it so I could give it to other people to do the work, that took me at least 5 or 6 years to get to that point.
Okay, so there's like, that's a whole separate phase, I'm assuming. That's like a fourth or fifth phase.
Right.
Okay, so IP in this sense is, it could be a book. It could be the talk.
It's your twist on the world, right? It's your point of view about what you stand for. And it's the value that you offer up into the world. Now, it's easy to create kind of mediocre content. You know, you only have to go into LinkedIn or any blog and you're going to see basically a not very good article by somebody who's going, oh, I should create intellectual property. I should produce stuff. And there's from when I started 15 years ago, it's much easier to publish and get stuff out there, which means there's just a lot of noise. But you know, I come from this, John, in two ways. First of all, thinking that almost everything is old wine in new bottles. So certainly in the space that I work in, there's not that much new out there. We're all trying to find our own way of expressing our take on it, our angle on it, our point of view on it. But my other point of view around this is it's really worth working the content to get it to a point where it does have an edge, and it does have an elegance, and it does have a focus, and it does have a strong point of view, rather than, as I think happens with many people, they kind of do a half-assed version of something and they go, well, that's kind of good enough. It's technically IP. And then they wonder why it doesn't take off. But it's like, okay, it's IP, but it's not very good IP. So doing that work to make good IP, that's a whole nother kind of level of work.
And so I've never heard it described as IP before. In what now, like initially I was thinking that it would be the copyrighted content that you teach in coaching programs or in workshops or in trainings. But you seem to also be referring to what we talk about as content marketing.
Yeah, so I am blurring the distinction a bit. I think content marketing is often the pathway to creating your own IP. And there's probably this gray area, which is this is IP, but it's also content marketing. So for sure, for us, you know, we make our money through our corporate training programs, teaching managers to be better coaches. And we kind of claim that as our IP. On the other hand, you know, most of that content is also in the Coaching Habit book that came out a year and a half ago. And that's now out in the world. So, you know, any person with a black, twisted, devious heart could take that and rip it off and make it their own in some way. So the book is content marketing, but it's also intellectual property as well.
I see. That is absolutely.
Is this useful, John? I mean, I'm getting a little confused
awesome.
In my own.
I'm loving it. I'm like, you're okay. Like, this good. Idea of the old wine in new bottles, which I mean, from a content marketing perspective,
yeah.
I think sometimes we tend to lose the value of what we're creating because we feel like it's just going into this sea of other stuff, anyways. And when you talk about not beyond going just half-assed and actually putting that edge on it or that real opinion, to me, just talking about it as IP all of a sudden makes you think of it more seriously.
Right. I agree. And one of the things that I am a real staunch believer in is the value of design to shape your IP. It's one thing to kind of create the content. It's another thing to then go, okay, how do I make this elegant and distinctive and beautiful? There's so much content out in the world that we can get overwhelmed by it. I do think the element of design allows you to make your content accessible and also distinctive. It's another way of creating that edge.
So as Box of Crayons now, you're a coaching company, a training company for coaches?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're a training company and we train, this is our tagline, we train 10-minute coaching so busy managers can build stronger teams and get better results. So we have a real niche. And you know what, you started off this question by going, so how did you, what's the one thing? And I'm like, dude, as you well know, there is no one thing. But what, you know, one of them is that understanding that hierarchy of that allows you to scale. If there was a second thing, it probably would be focus. And to quote Donald Trump, believe me, this is not easy. I suffer from what people have called SOS, you know, shiny object syndrome. So I'm creative and I like to build stuff and I like to start stuff. But we've claimed a real niche in our little space, a training company, and all we do is we train coaching skills for busy managers. And that is, there's a degree of terror that goes into claiming a niche. Because you're like, man, I know a bunch of other stuff and I could teach and train and sell a bunch of other stuff, but I'm choosing not to because I'm choosing to say that if by focusing and claiming one thing and doing it really well, that makes me distinct, that makes me claim a space that allows me to do blue ocean strategy and make myself different so that when I'm talking to a client and we're competing against another company and they go, well, we do leadership. And I'm like, yeah, they do leadership. They have 98 different courses. How good do you reckon they all are? Where I go, like, we have three programs, and they're all about practical coaching skills. That's all we do. So we do one thing, but we do it really well. If they're really serious about coach training, they're like, why don't we go with the experts?
Rather than the people who haven't.
And besides, Michael is so good looking.
And he's Canadian.
And he's Canadian. Love that accent. Exactly.
So interesting. And thank you for giving the second part to my first question. But so I got your book in July, and I've actually shaped some of my questions around the book because it's like I'm not a manager in that sense. And so I took from it what I could of as interviewing. But I've realized that my question that I ask, and the reason why I've asked that question to all 400 people I've interviewed, is it's my kickstart question.
Right.
I got tired of podcasts that I do the whole intro for 2 or 3 minutes before you get on here, and then I ask you, so tell me about yourself.
Right.
You're like, and it's like,
boom,
you're bored,
let's go for
and
it.
And the person, yeah, and the person listening is like, well, you just told me all about them, and they know about them, and you know about them because you've done your research.
Yeah.
So the idea is, the kickstart question, well, tell, what is the kickstart question?
So to step back for 2 seconds, the principle behind what we teach is to say, look, coaching, or as we like to say, being more coach-like, is such a powerful tool if you're a manager, if you're a leader, if you're an individual contributor. And coaching is simple but difficult, because the simple part is understanding that it's a simple behavior change to say, can I stay curious a little bit longer, but can I move to action and advice giving just a little bit more slowly? That's the behavior change. That's simple to say, it's hard to do. But we come from this belief that if you can't coach in 10 minutes or less, you don't have time to coach. So we've got to give people tools that allow them to make this coaching thing happen fast and happen as an everyday way of working. And the first question in the book, which for us is what's on your mind, is a way of getting into the juicy conversation fast. So that's how we frame it in the book. You've taken the whole idea of a kickstart question, which is to say, look, I want to get into this interview fast. I want it to be juicy. I want it to be interesting from second 25 onwards, not from minute 2.5 onwards. So I'm going to get us into a fast question. It's like, what's the one big thing? Wow, great question. I'm sure all of your guests go, ah, okay, and come up with something interesting. And so with the principle with this coaching, but just slightly more generic, which is let's get into a conversation that really matters. And what's on your mind is a really good question that will open up that door.
Yeah, and that's it, right? It's really getting to, it's showing them that you just, it's not going to be about small talk. It's going to be a real conversation, and you really want to know how they feel or what's on their mind.
Yeah. Yeah, what's exciting them or worrying them or getting them up at 4 o'clock in the morning? And, you know, John, there's a place for small talk, because there always is, you know, connecting with people as humans, not just as worker bees. But sometimes we just don't quite know how to get the conversation started, and what's on your mind can really help that.
So since this comes from the book, your latest book, let's talk about projects. And so projects is a loose term, but it can be in reference to the book or anything you want to think about moving forward. But you have a growing team around you. You're no longer the single individual coach. You've passed through the phases. Yeah. And I'm sure, as you said, lots of ideas come to you.
And passed out during the phases as well.
So, and you said there's lots of things you want to start, but what is that process of determining that a project that comes to you, and is it a gut process or a written process? But what's the process you go through to determine that a project is not worth just your time, but also your team's time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, it's a combination of those two things, John. So there's a degree of me spending time by myself with a cup of coffee, just kind of sketching out and playing around with what are my key drivers for Box of Crayons? How are we going to go places? Because now I'm a CEO of a 20 or 30 person company. My job is to figure out where we're going, figure out what needs to be done, to hire awesome people to do it, to champion the values, and otherwise just to get the hell out of the way and allow people to actually do their work. We've just actually this may make some folks laugh. We've just introduced a management phrase. It's like a safety word for my senior team to manage me. And it stands for this is the acronym, BTFAM. So it's like a radio station, BTFAM. And so it stands for, people will figure out what the F word stands for, back the F away, Michael. And that's what my team has to say to me. Every time I start meddling, they're like, back the F away, Michael. So I'm spending time trying to figure out what are our drivers. And therefore I'm going, okay, so what am I worried about and what am I ambitious about for Box of Crayons? So, you know, one of my worries would be, this is a CEO talk, but do we have a diverse enough base for our revenue streams? Because at the moment we just sell them through our direct training in the classroom. So I'm like, okay, so how do we diversify how we make our money so we strengthen, so we're not so reliant on one? But how do we maintain our focus? So that allows me to think about, so that takes me one way. Then there's a connection to our mission as a company, which is practical skill coaching skills for all managers. So that's taking me down the pathway of accessibility to the programs we have. And so I've got those kind of business drivers. And so now I have to take my best guess around, well, what gets me there? And for us, what we're working on at the moment is diversifying the channels through which we deliver our programs. So not just in a classroom, but through an app and through a virtual facilitation. But it's also taking us into how do we reach more people, which takes us into how do we find amazing partners who have a way of bringing our work into the world and into their world. So it's a combination of, you know, structure, clarity about what matters, and then you play around and you take your best guess at what are the routes forward from there.
And how often does the vision for the company change, or how often has it changed throughout the 15 years?
We're onto our second vision.
Wow.
So, and that new vision got rolled out 3 or 4 months ago. July was our 15th birthday, and that coincided with our 15th birthday marked a tipping point for the company in terms of it really stepped up to being a much bigger company. I stepped much more clearly into I'm the CEO. I'm not the guy in the center of everything, but I play a CEO role. And we moved from a more generic vision, which is about helping people and organizations do less good work and more great work, which still has resonance for us. It's like, how do you help people focus on the work that has more impact and the work that has more meaning? And now the vision has shifted to practical coaching skills for all managers.
Wow. So my follow-up was going to be, when did you make this shift sort of as a CEO? But that happened at the same time. So that's why you're still struggling with staying out of the way, Michael.
Oh, I'm still struggling because I just like to have my fingers on lots of pies. And I've had 15 years of having my fingers on lots of pies. So it's quite a lesson for me to step away and trust great people to do all of that, because it's seductive and it's nice for me to feel busy getting stuff done. It actually isn't that useful for the company or for the people who are part of the company or even for me. So apart from that, it's a really good idea.
So does that mean that you in the foreseeable future will stay CEO, or because this must be a real learning, sort of like you trying to stay ahead of the ball of the company growing, yeah, and wanting to, but needing less of you to grow, but also you are used to being in there.
Yeah. So that's a good question. I mean, it'd be interesting to come and ask me in 18 months' time where we're at, because what I see is that companies tend to have, you know, it's the classic, what is it, S curve. You know, you're flat for a bit, then you figure something out and you go through a period of growth, and then you plateau again, and then you have to kind of refigure what it takes to be reorganized to get to the next level. And we're coming off a plateau into a period of growth. So we doubled in size last year. We'll probably grow another 20 to 50% this coming year. So part of us, we're just scrambling to build systems and structures around that. And that's fun for me. But when we get to the next plateau, I then have to ask myself, Am I the best leader for that next reorg and rephase of growth, or do I have to reinvent my role again at Box of Crayons?
Right. And but also in a way, like, even if you stay as CEO, you still have to probably you will have to reinvent your role, because,
yeah,
I mean, if you're growing that rapidly, the same person can't control the company now as in a year from now.
Well, that's probably right. Yeah.
The same human. But yes, you've evolved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my role is already very different from what it was 18 months ago. And it will be really interesting to see where I am at 18 months time from here, if I'm still alive.
Well, we're going to trust that you're still going to be alive.
I'm hoping so.
So as somebody who runs this company that helps managers and with coaching,
yeah,
personally, do you have coaches around you, executive coaches or personal coaches?
So I have a coach. I have a number of ways I lean into support. So I have my coach and kind of the coach of our leadership team is a guy called Ernest Oriente, and he's really coached me for, I think, 8 years now. I went through a lot of coaches really quickly, and they came and went because I outmaneuvered them. And what's annoying about me is that I know enough about coaching that I've got a whole bunch of tricks to avoid getting coached if I don't want to. And part of me wants to, and part of me doesn't want to. So unfortunately, I kind of found a way to collude with them. So I didn't, you know, I was paying money to not get coached. It was like, okay, that's stupid. But then when I met Ernest, I just can't BS him. He doesn't fall for any of my tricks. So he's been a great guide, and he has some real useful subject matter expertise for me. He's a sales and marketing guy, so he helps me stay smart about money, which isn't my strong suit. I also have a mastermind group who I've worked with for, I think it's 11 years now, so four or five coaches and lovely human beings, and we work really hard to be an active mastermind group. We check in on web boards 3 to 5 times a week, probably each, kind of just going, here's what I'm up to, here's what I'm looking at, here's the latest. It's the minutiae that allows the friendships and the understanding to keep evolving. We talk on the phone twice a month, so the first and the third Mondays for an hour and a half. And, you know, we'll check in, and one of us or two of us or three of us will go, here's what I need help with. And then once a year, we meet for 4 or 5 days to, A, hang out and have fun, but also kind of to do some deeper work.
Wow. I love it. I have an interestingly similar structure, actually, for a mastermind. But with the mastermind group, in contrast to that coach you had at first,
yeah,
are you able to stay coachable in the group?
Yeah, because A, they're all very good coaches. They're all master coaches in their own right. B, most of what we're working on is less about the mechanics of business and more about how do we show up as leaders and the people we want to be. And see, at this stage, we all just know each other's patterns so well, and we know each other's tactics for avoidance, that we're all really good at holding each other's feet to the flame. So yeah, I can't get away with much with this group. I keep trying, but they're too smart for me.
And such a well-versed coach and somebody who's been through it personally, but what is it that makes somebody coachable?
I think it's a combination of they're hungry for insight and they're hungry for action. You know, they want to learn something and they want to do something. They want to learn something different and they want to do something different. And what comes with that is a willingness to look at yourself and a willingness to be, you know, vulnerable to an extent, and a willingness to be courageous and try some new stuff out. I think when you've got that, you've got somebody who has the prospect to be a really great person to work with and to coach.
Is it part of like the manager's job to make their team coachable?
So the way we talk about it is less about manager, you need to coach your people. And it's more about manager, you need to be more coach-like with your people, which is simply, you know, stay curious a little bit longer, jump in with action and advice a little bit more slowly. So our three principles to them are be lazy, be curious, be often. Be lazy, stop fixing it for them. Be curious, stop giving them so much advice because you're an advice-giving maniac. And be often, every interaction can be flavored with curiosity. And so it's less about that kind of, oh, this is a coaching session, so this is about personal growth. It's more about, this is a way of being more coach-like so that you learn, you grow, you feel more capable and more confident and more autonomous and more self-sufficient in the work that you do.
So it's a difference in approach in a,
yeah,
sort of in a mindset way from the coaching perspective.
So the jargon that shows up in this space is they talk about the difference between coaching for development and coaching for performance. Coaching for performance boils down to, are you getting stuff done? You know, it's like, okay, we're calling it coaching, but it's really about, let's focus on the task at hand. Coaching for development is looking at the person who's doing the task. Most coaching, most management is about performance. You know, it's about getting the stuff done. And that's the context in which we exist. Our work exists. But we're very much about, don't just get the stuff done, but help grow the person who's doing the stuff so that they become a bigger, better, more capable, more confident, more potentially used person. And so it's less about, I don't know, sometimes coaching is, okay, this is my big struggle and this is how I'm broken. And it's kind of not that life coaching thing. But it is about self-awareness and self-growth.
Fascinating. Fascinating. All right, Michael, this has been an absolute blast. I really appreciate you coming on. I would.
My pleasure. It's been a fast half an hour, hasn't it?
It has. That's the way it goes. But I would like to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could. You're going to probably be, you're going to know of this. This is from Dan Sullivan. He works with an idea called the entrepreneurial gap.
Right.
And so thinking of this and then interviewing 400 people, I've realized that as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we kind of always seem to be pushing sort of our personal successes into the future.
Yes.
Meaning no matter what we accomplish as a human or as an entrepreneur, to the outside, we can look super successful. To the inside, it's always that next metric or that next stage or whatever it is you want to stand on.
Yeah.
But you and I both know, Michael, that seconds before you hit that, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals, which creates this gap. So right now, we're going to try and close this gap. I would love it if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you the past 15, 16 years, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses. And please tell me how you feel about the whole journey up until today.
Oh, you know, I'm stunned at how cool it's been. It's like amazing. You know, I started Box of Crayons going, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just making stuff up at this stage. And so to have a company that's always been profitable, it's always grown, that has the privilege of employing and working with some amazing people, to have a mission that actually makes the world a better place. You know, I'm like, I could not have imagined a better place to have been. And I'm thrilled at the success we've had.
There we go. What else could we ask for? So, Michael, we've got to talk about the business in passing. I believe there's a lot of people out there listening right now who could get a lot of benefit from what it is you offer. So could you please tell them what Box of Crayons is, what it does specifically, and then where to track you down online?
Sure. So look, if you're interested in our programs for managers and leaders, boxofcrayons.com is the place for that. It's like we teach 10-minute coaching for busy managers and leaders. We're typically hired by the organization, so we typically work with slightly bigger organizations. But we've just launched my personal website, michaelbungaystanier.com. It's a bit of a mouthful, but Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Bungay, B-U-N-G-A-Y, Stanier, S-T-A-N-I-E-R.com. And that's more about self-coaching, self-worth, trying to have more impact, trying to do more great work. And I know we've got a great little book on how to be more courageous as one of these kind of free download books that are there at the moment. So if you're interested in kind of more personal stuff like that, michaelbungaystanier.com. And then finally, do more great work. Oh, sorry, thecoachinghabit.com. That's the website of the book. Also got a ton of free stuff that you're welcome to jump in and pillage. That's all about the practical coaching skills and the 7 essential questions you need as a busy manager and leader.
Very cool. Very cool. So Box of Crayons is the main website, which is
that's right.
boxofcrayons.com or .ba?
It's .com. Yeah, we bought the .com 6 months ago. So we moved from .biz to .com. It's another little moment of growing up.
Very cool. Very cool. As well as thecoachinghabit.com is the book. I absolutely 100% endorse this book.
Thank you.
For everyone. It's, I think just in relationships throughout your life, this will help you so much. And when you talked about design in your IP, this is definitely such a beautifully designed book.
Thank you.
It makes the consumption of it just so, so nice.
Yeah.
And then michaelbungaystanier.com.
You got it.
The free download of Michael's book, Be Courageous, right there. All you cost you is an email address. I will link to all of that as well as some Dan Sullivan I can dig up and the Blue Ocean Strategy book that Michael mentioned in passing. I'll link to that on Hack the Entrepreneur for you. You're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right now, it'll be waiting there for you. Michael, once again, thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure.
Thanks for sharing so openly with me. I really, really, truly do appreciate it. And please, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it is really awesome to watch.
Look, it's lovely to be on the show. Thanks, Sean.
It's time to understand what drives the value of your business. And to really understand this, you need insights into your customers, your clients, and your markets. And to do this simply and beautifully, you need Typeform. Right now, you can sign up absolutely for free at typeform.com/hack. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can upgrade to their pro plan and get 30% off for the first 6 months. Go now and sign up for absolutely for free at typeform.com/hack. So here we are. We've reached the point in the show where we need to go back. And sometimes my job is easy. Other times, like today, my job is hard. Because there was a ton in this conversation with Michael of really, really good stuff. And we went on to a few different paths. And so there's a lot to sort of unpack. But I found it. I've done it. And oddly, through this 30-minute conversation, I have to go back to the first 5 minutes. Are you ready? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But even in that very first year, I created my first piece of intellectual property. It was called The 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun. I was giving a talk and went, okay, this is my chance to see if I can even do this. And so I came up with the title, The 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun. I was like, that's a cool title. I wonder what they are. And I was like, okay. So, and this is the way my brain works, is I work best when I go, I see a structure, I see something with pattern and a rhythm to it. And then I go, okay, so what fills in that to make it actually work?
And that's the hack. Michael, Michael, Michael. I freaking love this. Like completely and totally. Because it, I guess because of your skill as a coach, it actually brought to mind or opened my sort of way of thinking about how I create a lot of content. And this is totally what I do. And I've never thought of anybody else doing it or working in this way. And so I'm glad you brought this up because, first of all, I love the conversation, the distinction that we had between intellectual property and just basic content marketing and sort of creating those things, whether it's books or podcasts or structures of some sort that are yours and make you sort of stand out from the crowd versus just putting out content to sort of attract more people to you. But this idea of coming up with a great title, 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun, and then being like, great, that sounds good. Now, what do I fill it in with? So if you are listening and you've often struggled with creating content or creating intellectual property in this way, this is how to do it. This is exactly how I do it. And I love that Michael brought this up, is coming up with that sort of title or the thing that you want to create. And then now that you have the structure, now you have a place to put it. So you're no longer staring at a blank page or a blank screen. You're no longer sort of working in the abstract. You've now created this structure that you believe or feel strongly is sort of congruent with what you want to create as your intellectual property. Now it's simple. It's not easy, but it's simple at this point because you have the structure. So whether that's the 7 steps of something or the 8 irresistible principles, it doesn't really matter, but this is a great way to approach it. Think of that. Think of the title. Think of what it is you want to create. And now you have the structure and you just sort of have to fill it in. Michael did this in his first year. This was 15 years ago. Turned it into a talk. He wrote it out. It worked. And then he turned it into a video that went viral. So I'm not saying that you can do that exact same step, but it doesn't. You don't have to be 15 years into this to do it. This is something you can do right now, and you should do right now for yourself and your business, is start creating intellectual property. And when you do that, think of it in the same way that Michael does, where create the framework and then fill it in from there. Michael, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, there was a lot there, and that was a lot of fun. I hope you dug that as much as I did. Michael can be tracked down at boxofcrayons.com or michaelbungaystanier.com. As well, we talked about Dan Sullivan's Strategic Coach in the Blue Ocean Strategy book. And Michael can be found also on Twitter as Box of Crayons. I'll link to all of that on Hack the Entrepreneur for you. And so you can head over there and, yeah, check out the book, The Coaching Habit. I fully, fully endorse it. I think it's an excellent read. I'll also link to it for you. But you can find it in any bookstore, I'm sure, and also on Amazon or wherever it is you buy books, The Coaching Habit. And it's, even if you aren't a manager at this point, there's so much to it that really helps me just sort of in real life, in my interviews, and then also in management. So it's excellent. It's excellent. Pick it up. Pick it up. I think you'll dig it. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for joining me. I really, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.